down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Monday Report. It is Monday, February 17th, 2017. I'm your host, H. James K. Today, we are talking about yesterday's Daytona 500. It was a long affair, I'll tell ya. What was supposed to start at 1:30 didn't even end until 10 o'clock. Yeah, it was a long day, but I was dedicated. I wanted to have something to talk about, so I waded through 4.5 hours of weather delays and suffered through all of the endless commercials for you. So, William Byron won. William Byron won for the second year in a row. As shocking and crazy as that is, considering he was a non-factor for the entire race. It was, so I hear, much like last year, where he wasn't much of a factor until the very, 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 very end when he won the race in overtime. So, I am not a regular watcher of NASCAR. I'm a bit of a casual when it comes to NASCAR. I'm not. I have a pretty deep knowledge of racing, but I don't watch NASCAR on the regular. So, you're getting a bit of an outsider's perspective on overtime. Overtime, which is how this race ended, has positives and negatives. The positive this time was that the race ended in an exciting finish. What could have been a really anticlimactic win for Austin Cindric under yellow ended up being a very exciting win for William Byron in overtime, even though there was another crash. Those are the positives. The negatives, which we didn't see this year, but we have seen in other years, is when there's crashes before the drivers take the white flag during overtime and force another overtime period. And then it happens again and again and again. And the overtimes will take an hour or 45 minutes, and it just goes on and on and on. That's the drawbacks. Honestly, in spite of those drawbacks, I think more racing series should adopt overtime, especially series that drive on ovals, like IndyCar and sprint cars and winged sprints and all that stuff. They should all absolutely have at least one overtime, because life is just better when the race ends under green. So moving beyond overtime, Tyler Reddick started overtime in the teens. He was very far back, but he finished second because he managed to dodge everything that happened in the crash in overtime that ultimately led to William Byron winning. It was all very random. There wasn't as much skill involved. You know, when you watch something like Formula One or you watch IndyCar, the man who wins the Indianapolis 500, he earned that race, because there is no easy victories at the Indianapolis 500. Much like with every Formula One season, nothing is ever easy. But Tyler Reddick and William Byron found themselves at the front when the race ended. Which really leads to the question, is this what NASCAR wants to be? Where it's just about who survives the crash and that's it? Because NASCAR, contrary to popular belief, before 1985, NASCAR didn't used to be like this. Now, the overtime rules is a very 21st century thing, but restrictor plate racing, which is what creates the circumstances that lead to the events of a race like this, where everyone's bunched up and then one wrong move collects 12 cars and that kind of thing. So, restrictor plates came about because back in 1984, speeds were absolutely insane. Like 225 miles an hour at Daytona, insane. Whereas these days, they'd go maybe 200 miles an hour if they're really hauling in a draft. But back then, the speeds were unlimited and they were getting crazy fast. And there were really, really crazy crashes in 1984. And they decided, we have to slow them down. And the way they did it back then is the engines were naturally aspirated V8 engines. And they put a restrictor plate over the air intake, which was 4 quarter-sized holes drilled into a steel plate. And the steel plate was then bolted onto the air intake and the throttle body. And this choked off a lot of the air that went into the engines, thus decreasing power, thus slowing down the cars. And the other thing it did, though, is whereas the races at Daytona would tend to get kind of strung out, now everyone had the same power. Everything was equal, so the fields were packed together dramatically. And that's when we started getting this crazy pack racing that dominates every restrictor plate track that they run on. And I mean, yes, it's exciting in its own way, but it isn't what it could be. Like, if you watch the 1979 Daytona 500, which was the first one ever broadcast on television, it's an amazing race with tons of rail passing where you're like setting up drivers and slingshotting around people. And it isn't a restrictor plate race. It isn't just everyone packed together. So there's fuel strategy and comers and goers, and it's really exciting. And it has a dramatic finish in its own right. And it doesn't have a restrictor plate. Whereas you fast forward today, today's races, especially yesterday's Daytona 500, it's like there's no tire strategy. There's no fuel strategy. It's just save fuel until the stage break, change tires and get more fuel at the stage break, rinse and repeat until the end of the race. And it doesn't have to be this way. Nothing has to be this way because it didn't used to be this way. But things are entrenched at this point and people are used to plate racing and are complacent. So changes are unlikely. But beyond just the restrictor plate racing, there are other problems with the NASCAR product, namely commercials. Dear God in heaven, there must have been a commercial break lasting 3 minutes every 7 minutes of racing. It was absolutely crazy. So many commercials. And they're always the same commercials. It isn't like you're getting 500 different commercials. You're getting like the same 20 commercials for 4.5 hours. Or in my case, like 9, because I watched all day. Because I didn't know when things were going to go back to racing and I had to be there. They've got to do something about the commercials. Whether that's more banner ads or whatever, NASCAR has to cut down on the commercials. There are too many ad breaks. But just beyond the restrictor plate racing and the overtimes and the commercials, stages need to go. And I've already mentioned some of the problems with stage racing, where there's not as much tire strategy and there's no fuel strategy. But I didn't explain why those are a thing. And the simple answer is, the stages throw a caution every single time. So there's no incentive to try anything other than save fuel and tires till the stage break, change tires, the stage break, rinse and repeat. So you don't see anyone say, I'm going to do something crazy and not pit on this caution and try to save fuel all day. And then they miraculously end up at the front because events lined up their way. You know, a great example of this is in 2016. Rookie Alexander Rossi won the Indianapolis 500 on a insanely bold fuel-saving strategy where they were basically intent to drive significantly slower than the rest of the field in order to save enough fuel to just not do one of the pit stops that everyone else had to do. Now, it worked because they won the race, but he ran out of fuel on the backstretch and the car had to be towed to victory lane. That's how daring it was. And it was incredible because Rossi wasn't a huge factor until he was at the very end. But you can't get anything like that in NASCAR. The only way you get a surprise victor is if there's a crazy crash, because of the pack racing and allow someone to arbitrarily just end up at the front. It wasn't that they strategized and executed an insanely bold strategy. There's nothing like that. Instead, it's, well, he was the last lucky son of a bitch who didn't get collected in that crash that collected the 12 cars in front of him. So now he wins the race. Which is really disappointing. It's one of these things where, as a diehard racing fan and a bit of a racing purist, I find it really hard to get into NASCAR. You know, there's the playoffs and overtime, and there's all of these things that NASCAR does that other racing series just don't do. And those other racing series, like IMSA or Formula One or IndyCar, don't need the artificial quality that NASCAR has in order to generate exciting racing on track. And that's a much bigger systemic problem with NASCAR that likely won't change unless the France family is no longer running NASCAR, because they're too entrenched in everything and they're just never going to change what is making them millions and millions and millions of dollars every single year. But we can always hope that it can, right? That things can improve, because NASCAR used to be a great thing that people cared about. And now, while it is technically America's most popular motorsport, it has no real place in the popular zeitgeist. There's no real place in pop culture for NASCAR, because it's just boring and they turn left. And that's really reductive, because I know for a fact that they don't just turn left. But to a lot of people, that's what it comes out to be, because NASCAR is boring. NASCAR lacks excitement. It lacks storylines. The things that it used to have, it lacks the heroes that it used to have. Richard Petty and Davey Allison and Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, all these great drivers who were larger than life. And while there are great drivers in NASCAR now, there isn't anyone who is a superstar who rises above the game, who transcends NASCAR. You know, there is nobody like Richard Petty or Dale Earnhardt Sr. who was just beyond anything else like that. And it all leads into much bigger issues with NASCAR that largely won't get resolved, because NASCAR has become what it has become in order to capture a quote-unquote larger audience, even though it ends up alienating some of the most diehard NASCAR fans who remember a different era when NASCAR wasn't so corporate and was a little more good old boy, podunk, southern racing kind of thing. But those days are long gone in this era of streaming and charter systems and stage racing and, dear God, that makes me sound like I'm 50, but I'm not. Either way, the Daytona 500, I didn't really enjoy the race, but the Daytona 500 is one of the all-time great events in motorsports, so I watched it, as any diehard racing fan should. Maybe I'll watch it next year, maybe I won't, we'll see. But that'll do it for our discussion on the Daytona 500. So next week, February 24th, you can look forward to an NFL Combine preview. We'll talk about players to watch, my thoughts on the Combine, whole bunch of stuff. But in the meantime, thank you all for listening. For those of you listening on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, do all the things, hit the bell. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, thank you very much for giving me your time. Thank you for finding me, for looking for me, because I know I'm a small podcast. So I thank you for that. It truly means a lot that you gave me 15 to 20 minutes of your time to listen to my rambling. Either way, my name is H. James K. Until next time.